Good evening, members of the House, and welcome to the sixth ordinary meeting of the 175th session of the Literary and Scientific Society. Tonight's debate is This House Would Live in a Genderless Society. But before we get into the order of business, do we have any council announcements? Oh, right.
There is just a spot has just opened for the fall of the USSR debate next week on opposition. If anyone would be interested in speaking on that, please message me on Facebook account.
Yeah, do we have any?
Also, starting from next term, there will be every Tuesday, hopefully weekly sparring sessions. We'll start off with an ordinary debates workshop, but every Tuesday from next term, sparring. So. Rather than simply doing that, this is how you debate every week. What we're going to do is we're going to get straight into the debates so you can get the chance to debate with more fun emotions without having to actually do it from the crowd. So take any of the pressure off of you. So if you'd like to learn how to debate, come on.
Do we have any other council announcements? I think that is all. So I'd like to welcome our Acting Secretary, Fintan Lawler, HLM, up to read the minutes.
Right, one second. I need to be properly dressed for the occasion. I think it suits me. Well, does everybody else agree?
No.
Righto. Let's get down to business, shall we? On the 19th of October 2023, Anno Domini, the Queen's University of Belfast Literary and Scientific Society convened for its fifth ordinary meeting of the 175th session. Convening on the motion, this House believes that the British Empire did more good than harm. This was indeed a wonderful debate for those that were here, and perhaps you'll receive a slightly abridged version of the events as time goes on. However, right. As usual, the debate, the meeting began with various announcements from Council. Nothing of value was said. Nor is anything of value ever said. Following a reading of the minutes by our wonderful secretary, who is not currently here, James Orchin, began the private member's business, during which Janet Toft raised the issue of removing Councillor Seamus de Fuecha of the SDLP from the Society's trust. For the reason being non-attendance, 39 votes in favour, 4 against and 5 Alliance voters. Fintan Lawler, myself, tried. Oh, I'm incorrectly referred to here. His Grace, the Bishop of Kildare, tried to raise the issue of condemning India, then shifted to discussing the issue of killing of a Canadian citizen by India in Canada. Responses were heard from Noah Barnley, Dermot Hamill, London Dermot Hamill, HLM. Max Curran raised the issue of a room in the SU, which is indeed rectangularly shaped, whilst named the Cube. He discussed the idea of the Trade Descriptions Act and so on. Following this, responses were heard by Dermot London Dermot, and then I once again spoke. Apparently I was very active in this last debate, of the issue of buying a sword. Responses were heard by some Trinity guy, this Trinity guy being Owen Connolly, who was a visitor for the previous debate. I'm not going to read that. Kira Robertson raised the issue of bad films. Responses were heard from Dermot London Dermot and Kira Swale, otherwise known as the mother of the house. Noah Barney then continued by raising the issue of the Georgia election case. Responses were heard by Dermot London Dermot, Aoife O'Donnell, Roisin Keenan, Max Curran and Kira Robertson, otherwise known as Sir Keir Starmer, the Right Honourable Leader of the Opposition. President's questions then took place. Have I caused an issue? I'm sorry.
Not the first one, though.
Questions were asked regarding our Honourable President's diet, during which the answers were swan, lamb, and then questions regarded her favourite takeaway. As a vegetarian, shame on you, she regarded that her favourite takeaway was indeed curry chips. Dermot then decided to discuss issues about the ownership of swans and a complex situation regarding the swans and the fens of a specific breed, during which are inexplicably owned by the king himself. God save the king.
Here we are.
After President's question, a vote of prior opinion was held. There were 12 votes for aye, 37 votes nay, and 7 abstentions, so the opposition clearly had it. Following this, the debate began, during which there were six speakers. This is where fun begins. First in the proposition was His Grace Admiral Fintan Lawler, noted KGB agent. He listed bad things like a spider in a bath and cold custard. He started with the issue of India and discussed famine and then former colonies such as New Zealand and the Dominion of Canada as success stories. Cotton, tobacco and linen were bolstered by the empire. Oh my God, did I actually say this shit? Great works of industry, communication and universities were using examples of great British imperial actions, including the abolition of slavery. First on the opposition was one of our many McSparrows. We've got a collection, you see, where he argued that there's a large disconnect between reality and the falsehoods of empire. He argued that the empire was done by intention as a means of exploitation. How typical. He raised the issues of discrimination within the empire. He came to Britain. Britain invaded the developed nation of India circa 1800. Wasn't strictly specific. He should have read a history book before he started. He argued that imperialism resulted in the plundering of the Third World. A strange thing given that the Third World is a modern construct. But we're not going to get into that. Second on the opposition was our Trinity friend, Mr. Owen Connolly. He said something about Adam Smith, who was responsible for the economic exploitation, and claimed that there was an overlap between the East India Company and the British government. Speech was very shouty and little value in it. The final speaker for the opposition was Dermot Londonderry, HLM. On the proposition. Thank you for correcting the record, even though this is reading of the records. He quoted Carson, continually quoted Carson. Discussed. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry, Rory, were you not mentioned?
Wasn't that one.
Right.
Talk about me.
Japanese, Industrial Revolution, the French, to quote explicitly, the fucking French. He also involved empire as he didn't act alone. Those croissant and baguette eating bastards. A sentiment which I trust is shared by the majority of the House. This was then followed by the final speaker for the opposition, Ms. Roisin Keenan. Trigger warning for rape and murder. I'm going to read these as they were written to avoid any such issues.
Don't.
Okay. During which we discussed the atrocities committed by the Empire, a stone was brought up to discuss the Bachelor's Walk massacre. Further discussions were made regarding the likes of Bloody Sunday and the actions of British forces in Northern Ireland. This is then followed by Roisin Keenan then proceeded to quote Churchill regarding Indians breeding like rabbits and continued to discuss the stone. During which he also discussed apparently that the proposition were very good spin doctors, and it carried on. Yes, but we've just previously discussed how. Okay, following this question, we heard from Noel Barnley, President Emeritus Daniel McCormick, HLM, and exchanges were had between proposition and the opposition regarding the subject matter of the debate. Following this, the votes were held, during which it was fairly conclusive that the opposition had won the vote of speakability, during which it was very clear that the opposition had won with a singular vote going to the proposition. Now, on to slightly more exciting notes. The debate today. Today we have the wonderful Harry Shaw, sorry, Ken, to quote it correct, to correct the record, the noted Anglican Patrick Davis, the Universal Challenge representative for the Society, Misha Gerard, Jonathan Geronimo, the Mother of the House, and the Right Honourable Daniel Rankin. Can I take the minutes as read? Right, moving on.
You like the pipe as well, bitch.
Daniel.
And now we move on to private members' business, where you can discuss anything that you've seen in the news or you're just interested in and put it to the House. So does anyone have any piece of private members' business here, please?
Right. So, a common problem in politics now is that a lot of older people don't understand a lot of the struggles that young people are going through. So, one thing that they do in the military is they force people to do a fitness test in order to actually join the military. I think we should make this mandatory for politicians, so that the old ones are weeded out. As the older they get, the less able they are, and thus, the younger people that are more engaged in modern society will be able to engage on these issues properly.
I'll go to Kira first, please.
This is actually kind of a discussion that's happening in America at the moment, which there are talks at the moment after a survey that essentially found that the majority of the populace think that there should be an age limit as to when you're in the House. And hopefully it gets passed, to be honest, because there's an awful case of I believe a Democratic senator who was very old and basically was struggling to kind of, very old and struggling to kind of realise what she was doing or et cetera, et cetera. Essentially they were saying, you know, that she was essentially pressured into signing a certain way because of her mental capacity at the time. And to be honest, like, I think there should be an age limit because it gets to the point where the same people are re-elected again and again and again and again, despite the fact that they may not be capable for the job or maybe they're out of touch. And it all just people, young people who are
gone,
who are very passionate about politics, even just get their foot in the door.
Anyone else in this? Jonathan?
If there's not going to be an upper age limit, why should there be a lower age limit? I want to see 5-year-olds running.
I'll go
Darwin,
then Ryan.
It's
English.
Dermot, HLM.
Sorry,
one second. On the fitness point, I do actually disagree. One, because I possibly could have political ambitions at some point, and I've got really
bad...
But
you're not going to fair Charlie anytime soon.
One, I've got bad asthma, so I won't pass fitness. Two, I'm really unfit, so I won't pass fitness test. And three, I don't like running, so I won't pass a fitness test. And I don't think the fact that I would much rather sit at home with a 4-pack of Mars bars holding back whether or not I should be able to run for political office. And on the point about old people, there should be an upper limit because I hate old people.
The point about a younger age limit is concerned because if you set an older age limit, you also should be excluding those who are young. But in reality, what you need for parliamentary style systems is just a term limit. Like, the problem, the reason you have really old politicians is because they get elected when they're in their 40s and they sit in these seats for 40 years. And it becomes a status quo. So just introduce a term limit the same as you have for, like, the elected office, same you have for the President of the United States. 3 terms in Congress, done, go on, it's over.
I'll go Max, then Sam, then Ryan.
Yeah.
Mini Jake for the minutes. I would reject the idea of a fitness test, and I would raise you that every politician has to do a bop-it for at least 5 minutes. Not even through like actual practical assessment, but just seeing Sammy Wilson wrestle with a bop-it is a funny image that I want to see in like the Belfast Telegraph or BBC.
Sam?
Yes, I will be coming to the defence of the old people this evening. No surprises there, just like Jake Jr. I'm surprised, Kira, by you bringing up the age limits, given your advancing years. time comes to us all in the end, Kira. I would say that the benefit of experience has to count for something still. I mean, we've had many, many leaders across the world who have been older people, but because of the benefit of their experience, they've been able to serve fairly diligently. I mean, look at people like, well, Churchill, for instance, he was 80 by the time he formed his last government. Gladstone was, I think, 83 when he formed his last government. On the other side, you have people like Tony Benn, who continued to be a very influential politician right up until very near the end, you know. So, while people like Joe Biden, perhaps this applies to, your side of things, obviously, because he's, you know, but I think that the benefits of experience might outweigh the cost of having older people, on the contrary.
Ryan?
I don't think you should have a fitness test or anything like that, so I don't think you need the mental capacity or being able to run very quickly. But I do think that the only test that should be applied to vote in is that you should have to pay tax, be a member of the Church of England.
Hear, hear.
Do we have any other pieces of private members' business, please? Jim.
So, as some of you know, I live in Londonderry.
What? You never mentioned this before.
And this is a very difficult time in my life, in the shithole that is the North West. But...
Gabbled.
A difficult thing about this is, anyone that has been to Derry, it all looks the same. And I spent 45 minutes the other day trying to find good charcuterie.
Here.
Because I'm a bit bourgeois. Not so I really want like good charcuterie. And I would like to raise the issue that the uncultured folk of the Northwest have not got charcuterie, and it is time for intervention from the East. So I ask the House, is now the time at which point that we intervene in the Northwest?
I'll go to you first. Please state your name for the minutes.
Tate Leach. Isn't charcuterie French?
Yes.
I thought we hate all French.
It's French, Italian. Oh,
I'll go to you in the back. Could you state your name for the minutes, sir?
Katie, thank you.
Yeah.
Cameron, for the minutes.
Thank you.
I'm from the Northwest. Do you have
charcuterie? Where? Where?
There's a very good butcher's near the diamond.
I've been the football.
Gavel once again. I was going to say the words gavel. I'll go Kira, then Max.
I had like a very unique issue in France where it was kind of like the opposite of her, where I couldn't get like the bulk standard stuff, and it really started irritating me after a while. Because they didn't have baked beans. Baked beans don't exist in France, which is still astonishing. The second thing was ordering anything in a pub was a nightmare, because everything had to be fancy. I literally went into this, no word of a lie, went into a bar, went, can I have tea? And they went, which type? I was like, well, do you have just normal tea? And the person brought out a wooden carved box, opened it, and it was a velvet tea holder with the several different types of tea you could have. And I went, aye, that one will do. And then I had my tea, and I went, do you have milk? And she looked at me very strangely and proceeded to go to the back of the kitchen and produced a big carton of milk in front of me, because having milk in France is seen as being very weird. So, my goodness gracious, be grateful for your standard, bog standard stuff, because my goodness, I had to get used to goat's cheese, and that is something I don't want to do again.
Yeah.
I think it was Keir then Max, if you still want to speak on it.
Has Sterling Hamill actually considered that he may have a skill issue?
But he's so
lying. Do you
want... I'd like to find a response to that.
You can respond.
I find that deeply offensive, and I will be contacting my solicitor post-case to deal with such attacking slanders and
I'll let a response from Keir as well.
I would like to apologise, and I promise I will commit suicide as repentance.
Oh, you should know!
What?
Don't put that in the middle of
the
That was interesting. Anyone else on actual charcuterie? I don't know. Ryan?
I'd just like to tell Keir that the suicide helpline is 116.
I'm not actually suicidal.
But also, how can you expect the people of Derry to have charcuterie when they almost certainly can't spell charcuterie?
She's
Jonathan, and then I'll take a new piece of private
yes.
Does everyone do charcuterie?
No, they don't, but I fucking do.
Yeah, Kira, please. Or no, not Kira. No one? Okay, well, we can move on to President's Questions, where you have 5 minutes to ask me whatever you want. As well as not letting go. Go to Sam first.
Do you have a favourite breed of goose?
There are different breeds.
Stick at them, she doesn't know there's different breeds of goose.
Whatever ones reside in the North Belfast waterworks.
I think there's an EGM coming quite soon if you don't know the breeds of geese.
What different breed
of goose you have?
I'll go to Kier's.
Far too often, we frequently ask you, what do you have for breakfast? What do you have for lunch? But why is it that you never ask us? We care so much about this because we don't seem to care at all. But how do you feel about this?
Why would I care? It doesn't affect me. And it shouldn't really affect you, is what I had for breakfast. I'll go to Max.
Who is your favourite musical artist?
Oh, it's Bob Dylan. Well, easy. Okay, I'll go to Ryan.
Do you think geese should be pronounced with a G or a J?
Wait, do some people think it's pronounced geese? That sounds too much like Jesus, so I don't know, I'd say geese. I'll go to Ryan.
So, when I was making my way here, the reason I was late was because at the front, I don't know if anyone else noticed, we had the whole US ambassador's reception. I noticed that one of our trustees, Brian Feeney, was welcoming in the delegation. Can we write a very strongly worded letter to him about the fact that they were blocking us getting to deliver it today?
Yeah, that should be his number one priority. He shouldn't care about Joe Kennedy, just the grandson of someone. He should know that the Litterific was being blocked, even though there are many ways in. Or you could argue that he was giving us a red carpet to the Litterific. I mean, he wasn't, but you could say it that way. I'll go to Jonathan.
Do you reckon I'll be allowed with this hot walk through there to see the US delegation?
They'll think there's like a weapon hiding in the hat. No, because that's American hat, actually. No, they'll welcome you. They'll think that you're meant to be there. I'll go.
Go to him. He's English. Go to me.
He's from South Carolina. Go to Johnson.
I'll go to Dermot then, Jonathan.
The president of Japan, your third oldest brother has arrived. Will you greet him as family?
I actually have there's my little sister, my big brother. And my little brother's meant to be here. He's probably outside. I'll greet them all.
Why isn't whoever the important person is here?
You know.
What was the question?
Why isn't whoever the important person is?
I'm not here.
We didn't invite him, that was the main reason. He should be here if he knew what was good for him. I'll take one more question. I'll take it from you.
What do you think about the band Swans?
The band?
The band Swans.
The band?
The band Swans.
Are you talking about the river band?
I'm talking about the experimental rock band Swans. What's your opinion of them?
Love them.
It's great to know. Thank you.
I have no idea who they are. And with that, I think we'll move on to our vote of prior opinion. So if you side with the proposition tonight and you believe that we should live in a genderless society, please raise your hand now.
Eight. 11.
Yes. Okay. And if you side with the opposition and you would not like to live in a genderless society. One, two, three. Why? Three. And if you'd like to abstain on the motion, please raise your hand now. I got 20. Yeah. Could I have the vote of prior opinion red eye, please? Benton.
Sorry, I'm nearly subject to a check. The vote is as follows. 11 to the proposition, 3 to the opposition, and abstention, i.e. alliance and or people for profit voters, 20.
Brilliant. And before we get into the debate, I'd like to read out the rules. So each speech is 7 minutes long. The first and last minute are protected time, which will be signalled by the bell down there. Please do not go over your 7 minutes. If someone does go over their 7 minutes and you notice, discount that part of their speech. It doesn't count. I mean, you can only POI people in the middle 5 minutes. To POI, raise your hand and say point of information on that point. POI, please keep your POIs to 10 seconds and no barraging, meaning wait at least 15 seconds after giving a POI to give another one. Also, very importantly, no back and forth. Lastly, no swearing. It is the constitution that if speaker swears, they will be fined a bottle of port, as Fintan was last week. And with that, I'd like to welcome Harry Shaw to open the proposition.
Men have knobs, women have fannies. But does that really matter? Good evening to the House, and today I speak for the proposition for living in a genderless society. I would like to begin my side's argument by defining the crux of our debate. This is that there is a distinct difference between a genderless society and a sexless society. Biological sex is defined by the biological difference between the XY chromosome in males and the XX in females, whereas gender is a far more contextual concept, where that context is based on where we live, our upbringing, and even how we are marketed to. I'll be speaking to you about how in the global context, we would live in a genderless society and how the semantics surrounding gender are on a spectrum based on culture, social, and even love. First, I will address the cultural aspect of gender. I had a few weeks to prepare for this speech, and as some of you are aware, the Rugby World Cup has been going on in the meantime. So I thought, who better to ask for primary research than the rugby lads? Now, while they may enjoy sniffing each other's rectums in the scrum, they do occasionally come out with something insightful. I spoke to a player of Pacific Island descent who made me aware and told me about the Samoan concept of a fafine. A fafine is a recognised third gender category which roughly translates to in the manner of a woman or like a woman.
On that point?
Go ahead.
That is a gender. So that wouldn't contribute to a genderless society.
I'm going to go into more detail about like why it's just like an illusion. Fafine individuals are typically biologically male, but take on female gender roles and are often identified as a gender distinct from male or female. They are widely accepted and integrated into Samoan society, filling a unique cultural role. These individuals play roles within their families and communities, such as helping with household chores, caregiving, and other traditionally female tasks. They may also be involved in cultural activities, including dance and entertainment. Their status in Samoan society is a testament to the cultural acceptance of diverse gender identities and expression. The fact that a stereotypical stoic culture of Samoa, Ragus, 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 come on Monty, has recognised third genders of equal status prompted me to check other cultures too. Current day representations that are outside of Western conformity include the Hijra of India, the Bugis people of Indonesia, and the Two-Spirit in Native American culture, all with equally significant status and importance to their own cultures. So gender on a global societal scale, spanning from the Pacific Islands, East Asia, South Asia, to the Americas, can mean very different things. I said I would examine gender on a spectrum earlier, and I will tackle this through the social norms associated with the roles. I, being a red-blooded male assigned at birth, grew up punching toy trucks and dreaming of the motorcycle gang I would run in the future. While my sisters wore dresses and wore Lelly Kelly shoes, the cutest, Alas. Alas, this was not the case. I came from a family of professional athletes when I was born with a genetic condition which had a 1 in 64 million chance of striking. It put a spanner in the works of what I was capable to my father. It is this internal conflict of my own body being impaired and not listening to what I wanted it to do I draw parallels to now with those who are ostracised for being uncomfortable in their own skin too. As I did not choose to be an outlier outside of what the preconditions of an average young male is capable of doing, neither should the people struggling with their gender identity. Socially, as a society, ultimately, to be genderless is also to be without prejudice or preconceived notions of what oneself is defined to be. The internal mental wrestling of which people with gender dysphoria could perhaps be lessened by a kinder, more welcoming social environment, akin to some of the prior cultures I mentioned.
On that point?
Go ahead.
You brought up people with gender dysphoria, but some people with gender dysphoria actually find that gender roles can be something that they can strive for, like trans women find that wearing traditionally feminine things help alleviate their gender dysphoria, so by eliminating gender, would there also not be means of making those with dysphoria struggle a bit more?
I'm going to go ahead and say my next point, which is hopefully supporting your point there. So socially, a genderless society should be centered around a stance of compassion to make outliers welcome and part of the norm. More social acceptance to gender fluidity would hopefully lead to a less high-risk medical procedures being performed as those affected by not fitting societal standards of gender. For instance, more acceptance towards clothing and other things which are traditionally gender-defined. Finally, I'd like to address how love shapes gender. If we look back to Plato's Symposium, a philosophical dialogue, a story of how humans were originally beings with four arms, four legs, two faces, were split into two by the gods, the notion that love transcends gender boundaries is implicit in this speech. The concept suggests that love is not limited by traditional gender roles or heteronormative expectations. Instead, it emphasized the idea that love is a deep and spiritual connection that can exist between any two people, regardless of their gender identity or biological sex.
Point of information. At no stage...
I'm good. A more recent example of how love shapes gender would be this summer in the cinematic masterpiece Barbie. In Barbieland, there were predefined roles of which every plastic doll had to conform to. However, Barbie and Ken, upon entering the real world, found freedom in being able to express themselves differently and not in the binary rules of Barbieland. They embraced the Kennergy. So I'd like to leave this house with a Plato-esque quote from myself. Ken didn't have a knob and Barbie didn't have a fanny. Did it really matter? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to this first and hopefully not last speech before you. A society where women can receive no legal protections in the workplace, where government has the authority to tell a person what their gender identity is, and where transgender people are no longer recognised. That is what a genderless future holds for us. The proposition may attempt to convince you that without gender, the world would be a better place, a place with less discrimination, a safer place, a modern society for a modern people. But it would not. A society without gender would in reality erase more than a century of human progress. It would reverse many hard-won advances in human rights over the last years. Take a quick sprinkling of carbon and nitrogen, a pinch of calcium and phosphorus, mix it all together with some water, and you've more or less made a human. That's the easy bit. But what actually makes a personality? What actually makes us who we are? What actually makes us have an identity? Things like, there are many things, of course. On one level, we've got our experiences and our ambitions, our hopes and fears for the future. But on another, even deeper level, we've got the things that we first think of when asked to describe ourselves, the things that truly make us who we are, our families, our sexualities, and yes, our genders, amongst others. By creating a genderless society, you snatch away a core element of people's identity, especially for those who are transgender or non-binary, for whom struggles with gender dysphoria and gender identity can form a cornerstone of their personal identities, beliefs, and outlook on the world. I decline. For generations, campaigners have fought for their right to express gender freely. What makes a proposition think that they have the right to strip this away?
On that point?
I decline. Moreover, gender identity is not the only field in which rights have been hard won. The gender pay gap in this country currently runs at 9.4%, according to the wonderful news source that is The Guardian. But it has historically been much, much higher, with arguments once being advanced that it was only natural that men should be allowed to earn more than women for the same work. I imagined a few people would be uneasy with that, and I fully agree with you. It is wrong that any person thinks that gender should play a role in the salaries people earn. But it is unfortunately also true that there are those who do believe this, or who are at the very least willing to exploit it for their own financial gain. Would it not be true that by abolishing gender, statistics relating to the gender pay gap could no longer be collected? Is it not true that the Equality Act, as it relates to women in the workplace, would cease to have any meaning? Because just by abolishing gender, we can't make biological sex cease to exist, or indeed these sex-based hiring practices that can be so harmful. I decline. It took decades of protest to achieve the codification in law, the right of women, be they cisgender or transgender, to be paid equally to men. We're not there yet, but we are so much closer than we've ever been. What gives us the right to even think of a society that would place us in jeopardy? I decline. Even ignoring glaring issues with this motion, how on earth would any government go about enforcing this? I decline. Can you imagine being the government minister responsible for the genderlessness of society? Where would you even begin with your government overreach? Which facet of people's lives would you inappropriately legislate for first? And then, if the government did somehow manage to roll out a major policy with no U-turns midway, a prospect most people from the north would warn us not to worry about. After HS2, but at least I guess they don't have seven bins or whatever it was going to be. But what would come from a government-enforced genderless society?
On that point...
I decline. How long before such a government would want to preordain every other facet of our lives? How long before we'd all wake up in the morning next to our government-selected genderless spouse and our government-selected house to get into our government-selected car, if they still allow us to have those? I decline. Go to our government-selected job. Would the Prime Minister like to personally declare what we may and may not have for breakfast? Would Rishi Sunak need to pre-approve my morning wardrobe choice, or could I pass that off to Stormont, providing they're sitting on this day? How would we fill the time during President's questions if we already knew what was on the President's breakfast menu? Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Giving any of the power to select people's genders or select people's lack of gender to the government would rapidly go out of control, and I admittedly hate the slippery slope argument, but this is one if I have ever heard of it. These are the tough questions, I decline. These are the tough questions that we need to find the answers for. But to be a bit more serious, I believe in a small government. I believe that the government should leave its citizens alone to do their thing in peace and privacy. I believe that people are happiest and most productive when they are allowed to lead their lives however they see fit and on their own terms. And for this reason, I believe that introducing a genderless society would only be the start of that slippery slope of our political and social decline. Finally, today is at its heart a debate about rights. The right to have a gender identity, the right to express ourselves freely. We all in this room have the liberty to identify with a gender. We all in this room have the liberty to identify with no gender. And that's amazing. There are so many countries around the world where people don't have this liberty, where people can't choose their gender. Why would we want to undermine that and tell people they no longer have the right to exist as they know themselves? Why would the proposition want to undermine the right of all workers to have equal pay? And why would they undermine our right to lead lives free from government control? Why on earth would we want to live in a society where genderlessness is enforced? Thank you. Thank you. To begin, let me emphasise that advocating for a genderless society is not about erasing the identities or experiences of those who identify with a particular gender. Rather, it is about creating a world where people are not constrained or discriminated against based on their gender. Daniel, could I have the next slide, please? Now, kids, I want to talk to you about a certain figure named Shulamith Firestone, and that name alone should be enough to persuade you to vote with the proposition. Now, as well as being Jewish and a paranoid schizophrenic, two things I personally consider pluses, Firestone was also one of the greatest radical feminist writers of the 70s, with her book, The Dialect of Sex, now widely considered to have paved the way for modern cyberfeminism. All things considered, I trust her. Now, Firestone's brand of radical feminism aims to counter all practices and institutions that may be viewed as reinforcing male domination, replacing these instead with an androgynous society where masculine and feminine traits merge and become indistinguishable, i.e. a genderless society. In The Dialect of Sex, Firestone makes the case that the social categories of masculinity and femininity require a transformation. Firestone explains that nature produced the fundamental inequality. Half the human race must bear and rear the children of all of them.
On that point?
No, thank you. Which was later consolidated, institutionalised, in the interests of men. This consolidation and institutionalisation of women as reproducers is why the state may be viewed as a manifestation of patriarchal power, serving to reinforce the tyranny of the biological family. Women, says Firestone, were the slave class that maintained the species in order to free their other half for the business of the world. Male freedom can be seen, therefore, to exist at the cost of women's lack of self-determination, their powerlessness affording their other half power. To resolve this fundamental inequality that removes women's power and autonomy, Firestone demands the freeing of women from the tyranny of their reproductive biology by every means available, and the diffusion of the child-bearing and child-rearing role to society as a whole, men as well as women. This may be interpreted in a variety of ways. At one end is the right to contraception, family planning, and childcare centres. At the other, artificial reproduction. The liberation of women from the shackles of biology is what is therefore required by the radical feminist perspective if women are to self-determine and be granted equal access to power. One common counter-argument to this vision of a genderless society, no thank you, is that gender is a fundamental part of our identity, deeply rooted in biology. While this is true to an extent, it is essential to recognise that gender is not purely binary. Many cultures throughout history have recognised the existence of a multitude of genders that exist outside of the binary. Moreover, gender identity goes beyond biology, encompassing cultural, social, and psychological aspects. In a genderless society, we would still respect and honour individual gender identities, but we would no longer use these identities as the basis for discrimination, bias, or limiting opportunities. Another counter-argument is that gender roles and divisions are essential for society to function efficiently. Critics argue that if we eliminate gender distinctions, it would lead to confusion and chaos. However, we need to remember that gender roles have evolved over time and vary across cultures. They are not set in stone and should not be used as an excuse to perpetuate inequality. In a genderless society, roles and responsibilities would be determined based on individual abilities, preferences, and merit, rather than stereotypes associated with gender. The opposition may argue that this approach undermines the uniqueness of the human experience. On the contrary, a genderless society would allow for a broader spectrum of human experiences and expressions. It encourages individuals to be their authentic selves without the pressure to conform to traditional gender norms, thereby fostering a more diverse and vibrant society. Another concern is how we would adapt our language, which is deeply ingrained with gendered terms. Adapting language is undoubtedly a challenge, but language has evolved throughout history, and it can do so again to accommodate a more inclusive society. This change in language would not erase the history of gender, but would demonstrate our commitment to a more equitable future. Ultimately, a genderless society is about expanding our understanding of what it means to be human. It's about creating a world where every individual can live free from discrimination and bias, where they are judged not by their gender, but also by their character, abilities, and contributions to society.
It's about building a society that values diversity, celebrates authenticity, and thrives on equality, rather than one that forces individuals to conform to arbitrary ideas about what it is to be a certain sex. My final point is that a genderless society exists within Star Trek The Next Generation, which they encounter in the second series, I believe. And personally, anything that brings us closer towards the world that exists in Star Trek is something I will advocate for. Yes.
Would it not be better if we were brought closer to a world like Star Wars?
No, it would not. That is a debate for another time that I will have with you afterwards in the pub. Live long and prosper. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Misha. And I'd like to welcome Jonathan Duranya as staff in opposition.
I've got my timer in here. Just before I get the stopwatch. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming tonight. Unfortunately, I have the great displeasure in having to explain the obvious to the proposition that one cannot define artificially into existence some hypothetically superior society to the one in which our ancestors lived. All the empirical evidence, and I stress all the empirical evidence, suggests we should live in a gendered society. But more importantly, gentlemen, we ought to live in a patriarchal one. I seek, gentlemen, to knock some common sense into the proposition by extrapolating evidence from two nations which share one very similar cultural heritage, one that has followed the masculine ideals of its supreme leader, which Rory unfortunately didn't put as my pronouns, while the other has been swept away by decadence and corruption. This would be the North and South of Korea. Kim Jong-un is the ideal patriarchal archetype. His wisdom, his strength, his unparalleled physical beauty has... Yes, sir.
Alright, so Mr. Tate...
Tate's too effeminate for me. Go on.
The North Koreans are incredibly malnourished, is that
what you're wrong. Westernized imperialism. Kim Jong-un has brought about the masculine principles of Hoche, rugged self-individualism and determinance, like Ronald Reagan, and it has brought about 100% rate of employment in North Korea, 0% rates of corruption, but more importantly, all the gym bros would agree, the importance of state-enforced prolonged periods of intermittent fasting. As a result, thousands of South Koreans try to seek refuge in North Korea, or the North of Korea, as some of you in this may audience may be of a certain political persuasion. But now, the South, BTS, unfortunately, in their degenderized aims, has brought about corruption and chaos. They have rejection. Infiltrated the lobbyists, now Samsung and Daewoo control the government. And now, unfortunately, South Korea's only export is faulty electronic goods with poor battery lives. But once we lived in a time of the three wise men, R. Kim, Vladimir Putin, and the rightfully elected President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Yes! When the God Emperor himself walked on Korean soil, him and R. Kim almost realized peace in the Korean Peninsula. But the lizards in the New World Order and BTS installed Kamala Harris as the puppet master to a senile kitty sniffer. And now, peace is no longer attained in the Korean Peninsula. We have war in the Ukraine. Global prices of food are skyrocketing. And all around, we are witnessing chaos. But you may... Yes, sir.
Just going back to your previous point, could you just explain for the uninitiated in the audience here tonight who the God Emperor is?
The God Emperor is Zeus incarnate. He is the return of the Deus Pater of the Indo-European tradition. He is Donald Trump, Donald J. Trump. I must say his name. But in Northern Ireland, perhaps one may, an empiricist or whatever may say that Jonathan, okay, and the global stage, patriarchy is a force for good, but maybe in Northern Ireland we can live in a genderless society. We once lived under two wise patriarchs. Oh, no. The Dr. Reverend Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness. Northern Ireland prospered under their wise and benevolent rule. But BTS activists installed Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill as leaders of Northern Ireland's two largest parties. And look, they have stolen the peace promises from us. No, rejection. And look at the UK. We were flourishing until Liz Truss ruined it all. But a man is now having to pick up the pieces as usual. But, gentlemen, there is hope. No, no more. I have a dream. All men will live together in peace, tolerance and harmony, regardless of race, religion or sexual orientation. I have a dream that one day we will prosper under the fruits of our labour. But the only way to realise that dream, gentlemen, is a return to tradition, because its light has grown dim in this age. What I propose, gentlemen, tonight, is that we don't elect, we install our Kim and Donald J. Trump as leaders of the entire globe and repeal the 19th Amendment globally. And this will make society great again. Thank you.
You are drawing on our honourable emperor. Alright, so before I begin my speech, I'm just going to say as well, and this doesn't count as part of my time if you're considering that. What I'm going to say as well before my speech, I'm just going to do a trigger warning, because essentially I'm going to be talking about homophobia, sexism, suicide. I'm also going to be talking about domestic abuse. So in case you all, no one's comfortable, someone's not comfortable with that, you can leave the room. I'm perfectly fine with that. So, to begin my speech. So, essentially I'm going to explain what our position on our side is, because I think it, quite frankly, dismantles yours. You didn't have a point. The first thing I'm going to say is, essentially, in our society, sex would still exist. So essentially, if you went to the doctor and you had a problem with your penis or whatever, they would be able to fix that, right? But at the same time, there is no societal connotations that come along with that. So gender roles don't exist, preconceived notions of essentially what genders are good, what you are good as a woman or what you are good as a man, does not exist in our society, which completely dismantles the first speaker's point. Because essentially where a lot of discrimination comes from is these preconceived notions due to gender roles, that women are inferior at certain things than men, or men are bad at certain things than women. So for example, that's where the stereotypical like thing comes from, where women essentially belong in the kitchen, not in the workplace, and vice versa for men.
Point of information.
So, yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, thank you very much. This is relating to something you said a few minutes ago there. I want to introduce you a wee thing called the biopsychosocial model of health. It's a model of health that says that your physical health is not placed above your mental health. You are talking about how, oh, in the society it'd be grand if you have a problem with your penis, whatever, a doctor will see to that. That is absolutely great, I expect that. But what about the trans people who are suffering from gender dysphoria, and it would help them to be able to identify with the gender? Does their mental health not get factored into this society?
Well, I'm saying as well, in your society, a lot of trans people, when they try to essentially wear dresses or they want to do something that goes against the gender norm, are threatened. They're threatened, they're killed, and also they're essentially forced to be the person that they do not want to be, because everyone around us sees the fact that you have to be in a box. And if you're not in that box, you're harassed, you're mocked, and or worse things have happened to people. In our society, essentially, because these preconceived notions of gender don't exist, if someone wants to wear a dress, if they have a penis, they can do that, because it's not a gendered item anymore. Same as they want to have surgeries to feel more comfortable in their own skin, they can do that, because there's no preconceived notions of you have to be this if you're a man, you have to be this if you're a woman.
On that point?
No, because that's bargaining, because I took so long to respond to that. So now we're going to continue on, because there are these ideas that come with being a man or being a woman. These ideas
on that,
that no, bargaining. Anyway, there are these preconceived notions. So for example, if you're a man, you're sporty, you're gung-ho. If you're a woman, you're more caring and nurturing, and you like wearing dresses, and you like wearing makeup and several things like that. No. So there's these preconceived notions of what it is. And this doesn't fit all of us whatsoever. Not all. There's no person in this room that I can point to and go, you're a woman, so I can predict every single thing that you are as a person. That doesn't exist. No. So because of that, these preconceived notions are more personality traits that we have shoved into a box that we have created, instead of just being what they are, personality traits. No, I would like to continue on by saying that if you like, and you're forced to do things that you do not want to do to fit societal expectations. So for example, with me, when I was younger, I didn't want to shave my legs. I was then shamed and pressured by both my mother, my friends, and everyone around me to shave my legs, to the point where I was openly mocked at a party and everyone laughed at me. Now, if they had done that with a man, they would have looked very confused. Like, what are you doing? Because I'm a woman, I'm expected to shave my legs, and if I don't do that, then I'm mocked. So to the point where I've not shaved my legs today, I felt a bit self-conscious, so I wore things that covered most of my legs. And this kind of extends to the fact that if you don't conform to social norms, you are either taking the mick or you're gay, right? And that's, and I'm going to explain this. Notion. So to tell this story, for example, there's a man online who saw that there were no lingerie for men. So he decided to create his own brand and publish this to the world, right? And this man is a farmer who's happily married with a wife and kids. And guess what every single comment said? Oh no, he's in the closet.
On that point?
No.
On that point.
Oh no, he's in the closet. Oh no, he's insert slur here. And they mocked him. Even though, let's face it, what he was doing was wearing a piece of clothing. Because we associate certain things with certain genders, if you go away from that, you are mocked or you're treated viciously. And this is where I'm going to move on to the homophobia point. Now, I'm going to say a story, right? I want to emphasize I'm a cisgender straight woman, and this does not mean that I'm going to equate my experience with the experiences of people in this room who are actually part of that community. But it does illustrate my point. So when I was approximately 16, I was at a party, and at the time, everyone presumed I was gay because I was very masculine. and a woman asked me to kiss her. I said no. I then leaned forward to get off of where I was sitting. She then started to yell homophobic slurs at me, and then she said, a quote that I will never forget, "We all know you're gay because you don't like dresses." Real quote. And this extends to a lot of people who don't feel like they can do anything or they can wear makeup. Like, there's no biological reason why most of the men in this room aren't wearing makeup. There's no biology to it. It's completely socially constructed. And also, it's completely negating the fact that there are people who say, oh, well, you're just adhering to a few when you're making a genderless society. But gender roles mess with all of us. And like for the fact that with men, you're more likely to commit suicide because there's a societal expectation that you're strong, you're rough, you're going to get by it. And that's why suicide rate is higher. Same with women. There's a societal expectation that you're going to be terrible at various things at work, so you get less opportunities. In our world, those preconceived notions do not exist. You are yourself. You are the unique things that make you. You are not your gender, and that is why you should vote for our side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kira, and I'd like to welcome Daniel Rankin to the office.
So I would like to start by saying that I think some good points have been made on both sides of this debate, certainly aside from some analogies, some fictional, like Barbie and Star Trek, some actually based in reality, like the very Democratic People's Republic of Korea. But I would like to really just start by saying there are two ways of addressing the question of a genderless society, two types of proponents. There are those who believe that gender doesn't exist or doesn't matter, and that everyone should be defined by their sex. And also those who believe that gender, especially the gender binary, is inherently oppressive and unjust for those who generally do not fit either male or female. I disagree with both of these proponents, and this speech will focus more so on the latter, just as the previous speakers have done here this evening, of to whether or not a gendered society is justified. So I acknowledge that gender is distinct from sex, as is mentioned by the proposition here this evening, and so supposedly a genderless society would have no effect on sex. But it is my opinion that if gender didn't exist, it would be necessary to invent it. Now, sex exists, defined in relation to biological traits, and society exists, I'm sure we can all agree. Gender, by the very nature of its definition, defined as the socialized obverse of sex, therefore must exist. There must be a social obverse of sex. Dismissing gender entirely would therefore also be getting rid of a good degree of recognition of sex itself. Because any social recognition of sex plays through gender, and gender by definition. To believe in the necessity of gender is not to be an absolutist, which the proposition have somewhat implied. It is not to acknowledge that masculinity is this and femininity is that. It is, however, to acknowledge the tendencies of men and women, what jobs they go into, their lifestyles, their parental styles, agreeableness, empathy. These are all tendencies that are and ought to be acknowledged. A post. Go ahead.
Not an absolute rule. So everyone has to adhere to an absolute rule when they don't fit that. So essentially, if say you're very caring and nurturing father, you're less likely to gain custody over the mother because of the preconceived.
Yeah. Well, generally speaking, a gendered society is an absolute rule. A gendered society is where people generally have gender, and that. I don't deduce from that would ever be absolutist in any way. Again, as the proposition have said, there are different notions of masculinity and femininity, and indeed third genders in other cultures across the world. So a post-gender society or a genderless society would be harmful perhaps in a similar way as to a racially colorblind society. If people didn't see race, as is pointed out by some race scholars, they wouldn't see racial discrimination. Likewise, if people didn't see gender, they wouldn't see gender-based discrimination, which absolutely exists.
On that point?
Go ahead.
If they didn't recognise gender, there wouldn't be any gender-based violence because there would be no gender to acknowledge.
Yeah, okay, theoretically, that would be true. If, if it were possible that no one saw gender, yes, okay, there would be no discrimination based on gender. But from practicality, how would society go about making a genderless society and intentionally not seeing gender? That seems completely unrealistic. So it is often argued that the gender binary is arbitrary. That is wrong, as I have just said, as it is the socialized obverse of sex, and sex is a biological trait which, with some exceptions, is a binary. A society that has no recognition of sex would in the extreme go extinct by nature of not acknowledging reproduction. But I'm not a fatalist, as I know that it is in the nature of many people to enjoy maintaining their gender on an individual level, either happy to be male, female, and indeed another gender, or genders. Indeed, there is a sex-gender distinction, and I certainly ought to acknowledge the many people whose gender does not align with their sex. I would support a society that accepts that some people do not fit either the sex they were born, or male and female at all. But we're talking about society as a whole. It is obnoxious to suggest that all people should have a disconnect in feeling uncomfortable about their sex. The vast majority of people are just fine with their gender and sex being congruent. Those who do not have that security absolutely deserve society's support. In opposing the so-called biological determinism of sex, some support an arbitrary formulation of genderlessness. The thing is, the only way a society can become genderless is to simply stop thinking about gender, or stop seeing gender, as I've said. If a society, hypothetically by force, aims to rid all remnants of gender from society...
On that point...
Go ahead.
This debate, we do not have to, on our side, we do not have to prove how we create a genderless society. It's this house would live in a genderless society. It's a thought experiment. So if you could live in a society where gender just didn't exist, would you? It's not, we don't have to
yes.
prove how we could create it or change the society.
Well, of
it's
course.
You live in a hypothetical world.
Of course, the realism of the matter absolutely it needs to be taken into account as well, and I'll get to that in a moment. gender would strongly be considered in all conscious social actions if there is a movement to abolish gender. Indeed, society perhaps becomes more self-conscious in gender if there is a movement to abolish it. Stop thinking about gender. Who is doing that? I know that the proposition are not the ones stopping all considerations. Gender is perhaps more considered than ever in modern society. The argument relies on a form of philosophical positivism that the idea of a post-gender society can never be separated from the argument for a post-gender society. But that separation is impossible. In the argument for a post-gender society, you're inherently considering gender above anything else, and so corrupting the very idea. If gender is entirely nurture, why do all societies have them? Why, in another way, do all societies have something so supposedly arbitrary? The answer is because gender is much more important than the proposition would have you believe. As I have said before, I'm not going to spout concrete and dogmatic ideas of what masculinity and femininity definitively are or definitively aren't. The tendency of humans to form gender-based societies is a fundamental tendency, and for reasons stated previously, I cannot picture a society without it. So, to conclude, I could try to see how a genderless society would look like. It would be a society without fathers and mothers, without brothers and sisters, uncles and aunts, nephews and nieces, and without fraternity and sorority in general. That is not a society I hope to live in, and I hope you will join the opposition against the motion this evening. Thanks.
Second round of applause for me. And now we move on to questions. So how these work is I'll ask someone in the audience question for the proposition or opposition. Sorry?
Can I go with the mayor quickly?
Yes. One person can respond. Dermot, do you want to take over for the minutes? No, just let Dermot do the minutes. Do we have a question for the proposition? We'll go to Ryan first.
I guess my sort of question for...
Do you need the minutes?
No, you don't buy it. Alright.
The question is the proposition.
I'm sorry, I only hear a speech for the first time. You sort of argued that the other side in a sort of society where gender exists, it has to be a very absolutism to place of gender, basically, that's what you described. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. We could have a society in which gender exists, but it's a lot more of a fluid of a concept. So you can have people who are, you know, more masculine than feminine, but not necessarily that everyone has to fit within a certain box. So how do you sort of address that? Because I don't think the proposition, I don't know, I hope the proposition, the opposition to our argument, you have to have an absolute strict interpretation of gender, you're sort of creating a false dichotomy, really.
It's just one person.
I think just answer it by the way you want
to. Yeah, not fair.
No, you speak at all. About the fluidity of gender, so I've spoken about different cultures, like so in Samoa there's a tafafe, which means that they traditionally take on more feminine roles. I think Misha spoke about the removal of reproductive purposes, so that's more of a fluid approach to gender. Whereas Kira was just responding to the more binary approach.
So just why do we have to create a
general
society
then,
if that
makes sense?
I
only one person.
Rather than in a gender, like if given the alternative, we're arguing that we'd rather live in that than the present society, I guess.
Okay, opposition to respond.
Then how we've created one.
Sorry, I'm serious.
What the hat on?
What was your question again about gender roles being an absolute or something like that?
Not necessarily having to be absolute.
Right.
As an alternative.
Well, you see this thing, this is where you're wrong. Because we do have an ideal masculine archetype. Now, quite frankly, I don't care about the women. But we as men have something to live up to. And it's very important that we fulfill our duties. So therefore, kindred and society is the best in the world. And therefore, we ought to live in this
Do we have a question for the opposition?
Me, please.
Okay, don't want
to. Right. I'm fucking interested in you. Right. So you did this old rig from his father and I love it. Stop playing for my ear. Right. Did this big spiel about how men are class and you're definitely not gay. How, you know, women are shit leaders and, you know, how wonderful men leaders are.
Yes.
And you're definitely not gay. So,
yes.
Right, you listed some of the best leaders of all time. Mm. Kim Jong-un, Trump, the very Reverend Dr. Ian Paisley. So I put it to you.
Okay.
One of the greatest leaders in British history. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. Your view of leadership, when we can very easily look at one of the greatest periods in British history, with a female leader.
Well, one of the things about Margaret Thatcher is that when we, you know, we look past the dress.
Don't get in your back.
So I'll let the audience put two and two together. About the statue of Margaret Thatcher. But one could potentially say...
Maybe
for the best of having a career in the future.
You've killed it now.
I would just say that Margaret Thatcher is a very handsome woman.
Every Prime Minister needs a living.
Can the proposition please respond to that? Okay, Alec here.
But that's kind of what my whole point is. Even though we know that a woman is fully capable of having the qualities that make, you know, the gung-ho leader, the person that takes decisions, the person that should be in power, right? Even though we know that is very capable of a woman. No, but what I'm saying is, when it's like very, very, we know that that a woman can absolutely do that. Yeah, how many female prime ministers are there?
Currently.
And it's, but that's what we
do. Too many! Too many!
What I'm saying is, there's two
It's free.
But what I'm saying is, despite of us knowing it's nonsense, that's a fantastic example of why societal roles and gender norms shape our society, even if we know it's nonsense. That the fact that the majority of our leaders are men, that a women leader, frankly, is becoming more common, but it's still less common for, let's face it, even though we all know that women are perfectly capable of being great leaders, that in reality, we see far more men.
Peerless Will loves Mrs.
Do we have any abstaining questions? I'll go to look.
Why did you go?
Well, he was the only one.
There are genders, they support men. Okay, given that Simone de Beauvoir, one of the leading thinkers in feminism, I absolutely hear her. But still. Even she said that one is not born a woman, one becomes a woman. So even in that sort of paradigm, the sort of liberal French paradigm, being a woman has nothing to do with your sex. So I put it to both of us. What is a
woman? No.
Do we have any questions for the proposition?
Yeah.
Daniel said the word, said Daniel.
I apologise, I didn't hear the about this half. I heard a bit of yours, but you said, and I kind of take a bit of objection that you didn't have to put forward any sort of vision of a society that could realistically happen. No, I don't know. I think that matters, for one. And if you're just going to get up and go, in a hypothetically perfect society where gender isn't an issue, who on earth wouldn't vote with you? That's not what you're pitching. You're pitching why we ought to do it. And I think that you didn't exactly get there, and I think you ought to engage with what these guys are saying a little more, because they're criticising your argument, but you're just kind of going, hey, these don't count, because we're not talking about that one, we're not talking about all those criticisms, we're talking about a perfect one where those criticisms just don't apply.
Kira.
Right, so the whole thing about this debate is it's supposed to be a hypothetical thought experiment. That's where it was initially created. So this idea that if a genderless society existed where we didn't have gender, would we want to be born into it or would we want to live in it? Or is the binary between like gender, sex and all that, is that necessary for us to function as a society? And would we be better off in a genderless society, say if we were born into it, or if we, you know, if we were just a normal society? But to kind of like go into this side, right? The thing is, like, a genderless society has been experimented upon in different kind of islands. It
sounds like something that's soothing.
Yeah, something like that. Like, they basically tried to raise people up in nurseries, and they actually found that. And there's many different parents who choose to raise their child as genderless. And they find that they're much more likely to explore things that typically don't equate to their own gender, etc., etc. And of course, like, there's no perfect example, because I can't pull someone who has been not exposed to a gendered society as an example, right? But like, at the end of the day, we can talk about the problems that gender roles play in our society and how that shapes our society. where and they have points that still stand, whereas it would be more difficult to prosecute someone based on gender discrimination, for example, which is absolutely a thing which could happen. But it's the argument, because then it goes into how much of discrimination is based on like nature versus nurture, etc. Whereas is these preconceived notions about women purely stuff that's taught to us, or is it like or would it exist even if we had a society where gender didn't exist? You know, would I just look at someone and because of their facial structure go, I automatically dislike you more? That's the kind of concept we're talking about here, if that responds to your question.
Opposition to respond, only one person. Patrick?
Well, for starters, I would say to you that looking at people's facial structure and saying I dislike you is basically the entire way modern dating apps work. No, in all seriousness, on our side we're using the only society we know as a reference for what this hypothetical society would look like. And I'm going to propose a better motion than this to you. Rather than this house would live in a genderless society, let's just go for this house would live in a humanless society, because we are all utterly horrendous and are going to abuse no matter what. We're going to abuse biological sex if we don't have gender to abuse, to discriminate against each other. So that's where our argument is coming from, and I hope you can see that.
Do we have a question for the opposition?
Well, I'm trying to ask this entire thing. Okay, first of all, Niles, secondly, so a point that was brought up was trans people, and a point was brought up about gender dysphoria and how like gender roles can be used as a way to help alleviate their dysphoria. However, there's the argument to be made that it actually doesn't, because a lot of trans people, they will be like a lot of them will transition at later stages in their life. Like a lot of them won't transition early on, so they'll be socialized into more male hobbies or female hobbies, and this can actually make it very hard whenever they do transition. They'll lose friends, they'll lose a lot of that. So by living in a genderless society where they're not given these burdens, where they have to participate in specific things in order to fit that prescribed gender that they wish to transition to, would the genderless society not be better for them? And on another point of that, by arguing that it would be better because with them adhering to those roles, you're also saying that we can convert trans people by changing what roles our gender would have. So say someone wants to transition into a woman and they want to do these things, if we say that those are male things that they are trying to perform, are we not arguing that we can convert a trans person to not want to be a woman by making male hobbies the hobbies that are associated with women?
Opposition to respond, who would like to?
Well, I mean, what's being brought up is the idea that gender is a social construct, and that sort of, in a way, implies that it is, you know, consciously constructed. I mean, I think it was a feminist who said there's the idea of undoing gender. I think that's completely separate, because a social construct, as it is being said, does not have to be consciously created. It can be a product of many things: psychology, culture, and sociology, and indeed the sex itself. So. If a transgender person wants to transition into a particular gender, and they are that gender, if they fundamentally have a gender, if the vast majority of people have a gender, then you're in a gender society, generally speaking. And then the point you brought up about, sorry, this is a deflection from the question and all the questions, but about Sweden, I mean, it's been experimented on, but again, it's a very small sample size.
Yeah.
It's what, 10 million people in Sweden? I don't know how many people are experimenting. It's experimenting on. Yeah, so I don't think there's much empirical evidence either for the abolition of gender roles.
And proposition to respond.
Do you want me to respond? Yeah, actually you responded.
No, I thought that was a really good point about like I think when it comes to like looking at kind of like trans individuals in the context of this debate, like having a society free from like gender, free from like our concept of what gender is, would allow trans individuals to express themselves a lot more freely without, if they feel they need to transition, a lot of, like, I think somebody on the opposition brought up the fact that quite a lot of trans individuals find solace in conforming to traditional gender roles when they transition. There's a bit of society that is without gender, they wouldn't feel that pressure to have to conform to these standards in order for them to feel validated in their gender identity. they would just be able to pursue whatever they felt reflected their identity.
And do we have an abstaining question lastly?
Does gender exist in a genderless society?
What?
Because I think a lot of the points made by some of the sides have been sort of leaning towards a society where gender isn't important at all, rather than where gender doesn't exist. And likewise, I don't know how many of the criticisms from the opposition have focused on there being no gender, rather than an absence of strong gender.
Isn't that what genderless means?
No, okay, well, opposition respond first. Do you want to respond? Was that your response?
Okay, you're going to respond again?
Yeah.
I mentioned the idea that if you stop thinking about gender, that is probably the best way to have a genderless society. Because if you have a conscious action, if you have a conscious movement out there in the extreme, I'm not suggesting that the proposition wants a government, a tyrannical government, like North Korea or whatever, to abolish gender.
Only one person is wrong. Proposition, do any of you?
Okay, you do get that one. I don't mind. Okay, that's fine. So, I kind of want to explain, I kind of elaborate upon it in my speech, but the concept of what our society would be like is that sex still exists. So, essentially, again, if you go to a doctor, I have the penis, I need to fix that crap. But the thing is, gender, because sex is actually very simple. Gender is where it gets all messy and complicated. The gender is influenced by a lot of things. It's influenced by your biology, it's influenced by your society, it's influenced by the enzymes in your body, it's influenced by your genes, it's influenced by your environment. I can go on. But the thing is, in our society, essentially, being a man or a woman would have as much societal connotations with it as saying, okay, I have brown eyes and this person has hazel eyes. That would be the societal connotation of it, where it's just a fact.
But gender still exists.
No, but it's more like sex exists, but the whole connotations with what that comes with. If you're like the whole thing about, if you're a man, you have to be a leader, you have to be strong, you have to, be resilient, that doesn't exist anymore. Where it's, what's
it? Oh, does that mean you can start your own set?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like this idea that essentially, like, I don't conform to the typical idea of being feminine, right? I don't like makeup, I don't like dresses, I'm very sporty, I'm very, let's face it, blunt, right? And in that society, that would just be, that's just here, instead of, it's just, like, with women, for example, literally, there are women figures who have gotten critiqued for being typical, or being a bit forward, right? And that's kind of where it goes into it, where it's just, you are not the traits that are associated with a gender, if that makes sense.
Okay, and we'll move on to our vote on speaker ability. This is not your own opinion, it's what side you think spoke best tonight. So if you think that the proposition spoke best tonight, this side, please raise your hand now.
Oh, the proposition.
I got 20.
I got 20.
Can I go back to something? We did it go to games, but only kind
of. Fuck off! Stop taking my life publicly!
And if you think that the opposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All male.
And if you'd like to abstain, please raise your hand now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Could I please have the vote on... Gavel. Could I please have the vote on speaker ability?
Madam President, the vote on speaker ability, the proposition had 20 votes, the opposition had 5 votes, and the abstentions had 8 votes, so that's roughly a Fermanagh-Southern Tyrone margin, so the proposition had it.
Well done to the proposition. Next week's debate is this House regrets the fall of the USSR, so please do come.
Oh, I love
it. We're all going to laugh. And please, if you're speaking, come to the front for a photo as well.
Lavery's after.